Scripture text for this morning is Ephesians chapter 3, verse 20. I read a World Book Encyclopedia article about the country of Israel. Here's what it said. Israel has few natural resources and imports more goods than it exports. Still, it has achieved a relatively high standard of living. Listen to this, it's very crucial to the message this morning. More than 90% of Israel's people can read and write, and the level of unemployment is low. Israel is poor in energy sources. It has no coal deposits and only small amounts of crude oil and natural gas. I was listening to the radio one day, and someone quoted Prime Minister Golda Meir, who was the Prime Minister of Israel from 1969 to 1974. I'm sure she was speaking tongue-in-cheek when she said this, but listen to her comment. She said, "Moses was not a good leader. He led our people all over the Middle East and settled on the only real estate without any oil." Now please tuck those key thoughts away in your memory. I'll tell you later in the message why I use them. One of the most astounding verses to me in the entire Bible is Ephesians chapter 3, verse 20. If God hadn't said it, we couldn't even begin to dream that it was true. But it's there. Read it with me, would you please? "Now unto Him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us." Would you think about that for just a moment? "Unto Him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or even can think, according to the power that is working in you and me." I want to speak to you this morning on a subject that has just consumed my life this week, and I have meditated on for 3 or 4 months now, the subject, how to increase your life potential, or living a life without worldly limits. And I want to tell you up front that I'm seeking today to challenge you to do those things that will both help you live longer and also help you understand your life potential, reach your life potential, and increase your life potential. I was at a conference several months ago when the message first gelled in my heart. I heard a preacher make a statement that I've been thinking about ever since. He said this, "A calling is a specific assignment from God that He puts on your life for you to minister to a specific group of people. Your calling doesn't change, but your calling may be enlarged or diminished." Now, I want to say to you, first of all, this morning, that God gives you and me the power. I'm going to prove it to you. Somebody's going to question me, but I'm going to prove it to you. God gives you and me the power to shorten or to lengthen our physical lives. He gives us the power to shorten or lengthen our physical lives. I'm talking about the fact that you and I have some control over how long we are going to live. Life is not totally static, totally set, totally predetermined. Job 14:5 presents the opposite side, an interesting verse in relation to this thought. Listen to it. Job said, "Man's days are determined, the number of his months are with thee. Thou hast appointed his bounds that he cannot pass." God determined before you were born the date of your birth and the date of your death. There is nothing man can do on his own without God to change that. Only God can change it. But God has shown us in His Word that there were occasions when He did change it. And He tells us how to get Him to change it. And you can change it either direction. You can shorten your life or you can lengthen your life. How can you shorten your life? Use drugs, smoke, drink, eat the wrong foods in the wrong amounts, don't exercise, dishonor your parents, try to stand in the way of something significant that God is doing, like Achan did or like Ananias and Sapphira did. I'll virtually guarantee you you'll shorten your life. Another way to shorten your life is jump off top of a building or shoot yourself. You will shorten your life. If you choose to do some foolish thing like that, God will let you climb up on top of a building, jump off, kill yourself. You will shorten your life. It is also true that you can lengthen your life. How? Let me give you several ways. First of all, by honoring your parents. Exodus chapter 20, verse 12, the fifth commandment says, "Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee." Ephesians chapter 6, verse 2 and 3 says, "Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise." He's quoting from the Ten Commandments. "That it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth." God says, honor your parents, I'll let you live long on the earth. If you honor your parents, something sets in motion to cause your life to extend. You say, well, you don't understand my parents. You don't understand everybody's parents. There are no perfect parents. Honor has not to do with them. It has to do with you. If you honor them, the bigger the scoundrel they are, the more God's going to notice it. If you honor them, honor depends on you, and honor can lengthen your life. My family and I took my wife's parents to Connecticut for 2 weeks just last month. Did you know this is the honest truth? That trip, the vacation trip, was not nearly as much for us as it was for them. If they had not asked us to do it, we honestly would not have done it. I humbly but sincerely said, "Lord, I want to give my wife's parents 2 weeks. I would be grateful if you give me 2 extra years on life for that." Now, I don't know whether I'll get it or not, but I don't believe it was wrong for me to ask for it. We had a wonderful time. We honored her parents. And if God will let me live longer, I won't hesitate to humbly ask Him for it. The second thing you can do to lengthen your life is to seek wisdom. Proverbs 3:16 says that length of days is in wisdom's right hand. And length of days, long life is talking about the fullness of your life, but length of days is talking about the length of your life. And if you seek wisdom, wisdom has in her right hand the ability to lengthen your life. The third thing that you can do to lengthen your life is to keep God's commandments. In 1 Kings 3:14, just after Solomon, as a young man, just as he was becoming the king of Israel, asked God for wisdom, God said to him these words, "If thou wilt walk in my ways and keep my statutes and my commandments, then I will lengthen thy days." God said, "Solomon, if you will follow my truths, if you will live them out, then I will lengthen your days." Proverbs chapter 3, verse 1 and 2 says almost the same thing. "My son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments." Don't forget God's law. You in your heart keep God's commandments, for length of days shall they add to thee. It says, if you keep God's commandments, you can lengthen your life. Fourth thing you can do to lengthen your life is take better care of your body. 1 Corinthians 3:16 and 17 talks about the body being the temple of the Holy Spirit. It says, if any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy. You eat the right foods in the right proportions. You exercise like God made your body where it would function better. If you get the right hard work and exercise, then you'll lengthen your life. And the fifth thing you can do to lengthen your life is to ask God to let you live longer. In Isaiah chapter 38, King Hezekiah was told to set his house in order, because he was going to die. He turned his face to the wall and prayed and begged God to let him live, and God gave him 15 more years. He gave God a reason to let him live. He said, God, I've done this. Now, let me tell you, you give God a reason to let you live, He might let you live longer. Don't say to God, Lord, if I can live longer, then I'll retire and travel and spend everything I've accumulated. It's the wrong focus. How about saying to God, Psalm 45:17, God, if you let me live, I will make thy name to be remembered in all generations. Therefore shall the people praise thee forever and ever. Say, God, I won't live for self, but if you let me live, I will make the generations to come to know about you. The atheist Voltaire, close to death, said to his physician, I am abandoned by God and man. I will give you half of what I am worth if you will give me 6 months of life. It didn't happen. He died. You know why? He asked the wrong person and he didn't have enough of the right resources to pay for it with. He said, I'll give you half of what I'm worth. It wouldn't matter. He could have given the physician all of what he was worth. He's going to leave it all behind anyway. But he asked the wrong person and he asked for the wrong reason. Jonathan Goforth, missionary to China. I was reading some of his biography this week. It really challenged me. I'd heard of him, but I really hadn't read about him. He lived from 1859 to 1936. At age 65, he asked God to extend his life. He wrote, Oh, how I covet more than a miser does his gold, 20 more years of this soul-saving work. God gave him graciously 11 more of those 20 years. I believe it was Charles Weigel, tremendous Christian, who wrote the song that I guess is probably my second favorite song out of just regular songs that I've heard. It's No One Ever Cared For Me Like Jesus. Charles Weigel was about, I may not have my ages exactly right here, but I'm close. He was about 90 years of age when he called his pastor in and asked his pastor to pray for him to live to be, I believe it was 95. And 91 came, 92, 93, 94, and I believe it was when he was 94 years of age he got really sick. And he called his pastor in again and said, Thank you for praying. God gave me these 4 years. But would you ask God to just let me go home now? And his pastor said, Are you sure? And he said, Yes, I'm sure. And the pastor prayed, and God answered, and Charlie Weigel went home. You might think, but I know a godly person and they didn't live very long. What you may not know and may not find out till you get to heaven is that they lived longer than they would have had they not done some of these things. Maybe they only lived, you say, they only lived to be 35. They might have only lived to be 20. It could be that God extended their life because they honored their parents, because they sought wisdom, because they kept God's commandments, because they took care of their body, or because they asked God to let them live longer. God gives us the power to shorten or lengthen our physical lives. Here's the length of your normal life. But if you do those things, you might be able to live this long instead. Now that is really, in some ways, an analogy of the second great truth, which is the heart of the message this morning. God also gives you and me the power to diminish or enlarge our life potential. He gives us the power to diminish or enlarge the impact of our lives for Him. You see, folks, we were not just meant to be born, to live, and to die. We were meant to do something for God while we were here. But you can enlarge that, or you can shrink that. You can enlarge your testimony, you can shrink your testimony. You can enlarge your impact, you can diminish your impact. Physical life is not static, set, and predetermined. Spiritual life is also not static, set, and predetermined. You can enlarge your potential, your opportunity, your ministry, or you can diminish it. 1 Chronicles chapter 4, verse 10 has been a key rhema or a word from God for my life for the last couple of years. Listen to it again. And Jabez called on the God of Israel, saying, Oh, that thou wouldest bless me indeed, and enlarge my coast. Notice he wasn't asking God to extend his life or enlarge the length of his life. He's asking God to enlarge the impact of his life. That thou wouldest enlarge my coast, and that thine hand might be with me. And that thou wouldest keep me from evil, that it may not grieve me. And I love the way the verse ends. Incidentally, if you look at the verse, that it may not grieve me, you see an exclamation mark right there. And then it says this, And God granted him that which he requested. God did enlarge his coast. God did bless him. God did put his hand on him. God did keep him from evil, that it would not grieve him. God did it. By the time of Esther chapter 4, verse 14, if you're studying the book of Esther sometime, King Ahasuerus had already issued a command that all the Jews were to be killed. You know, of course, that Esther by that time was the queen. She was a Jew, but they didn't know she was a Jew. Mordecai was Esther's stepfather. Mordecai, when he found out that the decree had gone out for all the Jews to be killed because of the wicked Haman's maneuvering and scheming, Mordecai rent his clothes, fasted, wept, fell down before God, and sent this message to Esther, his stepdaughter. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall there, it doesn't say deliverance. It says, then shall there enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews. From another place, but thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed, and who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this. Mordecai said, Esther, you need to understand that you're at a critical epoch in your life. You are at a critical season in your life, and at this moment, you have the potential for God to use you to bring not only deliverance, but enlargement to the Jews. What happens to her at the same time? Her life potential enlarges. Or, he said, if you choose not to, deliverance is going to come from somewhere else. What would have happened then? Her life potential would have gone down. Joshua 21:43 records how the Israelites, under Joshua's leadership, possessed the land of Canaan. Fellas, go ahead and throw up that map if you would, please. Listen to this verse. It is very critical now. And the Lord gave unto Israel all the land which He sware to give unto their fathers. This is just for the death of Joshua now. Listen to it again. And the Lord gave unto Israel all the land which He sware to give unto their fathers, and they possessed it and dwelt therein. Now, how many of you have ever seen a current day map of Israel? Let's see your hands. If you haven't, look in front of you and you'll see one, all right? I looked this up last night. The area, now you're looking at the country of Israel right here. This is the country of Israel. This is a current day map. Actually, it extends down just a little bit into this area. That's the area that Joshua had conquered at that time was just a little larger than the country of Israel today. It extended out a little bit over into this area and a little more here, but didn't go down, I think, quite as far as Israel does today to the south. Now, I want to challenge you to do something. Follow me very carefully. Is everybody still awake? Got to stay awake. You got to get this, all right? I want to challenge you to do something. Study the land area that God promised to give to Israel. Ezekiel 47:17 gives the northern border as Hamath, which is halfway up. It's still called Hamah in Syria today. Halfway, here's the bottom of the country of Syria, comes right on up into here. And halfway up into Syria is Hamath. All the way through the country of Lebanon, halfway through the country of Syria. Verse 19 of that chapter gives the southern border as Kadesh, which is on the edge of Egypt down in this area. The western boundary, the same as today, the Mediterranean Sea, and the eastern boundary, according to Genesis 15, 18, and Joshua chapter 1, verse 4, the eastern boundary was not here. The eastern boundary was here, the Euphrates River. It is very clear that that was the eastern boundary. Now, here's what I want to point out to you. That is an area about 10 times the size of the area that Israel actually conquered. Here is the area that she actually conquered when God said, Joshua, you've conquered all the land. Or when the Bible says the Lord gave unto Israel all the land which you swear unto their fathers. Here's the size of the area. Here is the size area that was the area that God said was to be their possession. If Israel today had the land that God promised her, and if you study Bible prophecy, this will be interesting for you. Israel will have that area when Jesus comes back to reign. This is going to be the size of the country of Israel when the king comes back, because God promised Abraham that it would be his, and he used the word forever. That is, in God's sight, this area is supposed to be the land of Israel right now, and it will be out yonder in the future when Jesus comes back to reign, and it will never cease to be anything but Israel's from then on. Now, but wait a minute. If Israel today had the land that God promised her, she would have not only her own land, this area here, she would also have half the country of Jordan, see this area here. She would have part of Saudi Arabia, the northern edge of Saudi Arabia. She would have a third of the country of Iraq. She would have half of Syria. Here's Syria here, extends up to here. She would have half of Syria. She would have all of Lebanon. Remember Golda Meir's statement? Moses was not a great leader. He wandered all over the Middle East and settled only on the only portion of land without any oil. Now, no wonder in Joshua chapter 13, verse 1, God told Joshua, "Thou art old and stricken in years, and there remaineth yet very much land to be possessed." All of this, 90% of the land had not yet been possessed. So what about Joshua chapter 21, verse 43, where it says, "The Lord gave unto Israel all the land that He sware to give unto their fathers, and they possessed it and dwelt therein." I studied it in depth. The emphasis in the Hebrew is not on the word all, but on the land. The emphasis is not on them taking all that God would give them, but on them taking an entire piece, all of a piece that God had promised them. They took a complete slice of the pie, and God commended them for it. Compare that to your life and my life. Most of us do not take as much in life as we could have of God, of what God wants us to have. We get a whole piece of the pie and we say, "Wow, this is a good pie." And you know, if there are people out there who are lost this morning or backslidden on God, you know what you need to realize? You don't even have a piece of the pie. You haven't possessed anything. You're sitting out here in a boat on the edge of the Mediterranean Sea looking at the land. Your life is futile, negative, void, accomplishing nothing. You ought to say, "I'm going to at least have a piece of the pie. I want to at least have some of what God has for me to have." Now look at this. I wonder. Now, I underline the word wonder here, okay? I wonder if it will not be possible for you and me to do the work that God has called for us to do, to finish it, and hear God say, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord." and yet still not have done all we could have done for Christ if we had increased our life potential. Here is your normal spiritual life potential. Here's what it could be if you do the things that are needed to increase your life potential. Here is how long you can live. Here is how long you might could live if you do the things that are needed to increase the length of your life. Here is your life potential. Regardless of how long you live, here is what you might be able to do if you get God to increase your life potential. How can you increase your life potential? If I were you, I would write these thoughts down. The first way I'd point out to you that you might increase your life potential is by enlarging your life calling. By enlarging your life calling. Now let me explain to you what I mean by that. 2 Peter chapter 1 verse 10 says, "Give diligence to make your calling and election sure." Give diligence to make your calling. It says God has a calling for your life. Be diligent to make it sure, to make it firm, to make it stable so that it's not wobbling all over the place. You don't, listen to me, you don't build a good solid house if the foundation's shaking. And you won't build a solid life as far as accomplishing what God has for you to do unless you know precisely what your calling is and you are have made it sure and now you are building on that and you can increase. Listen, if the foundation is solid, did you know this building is built in such a way that we can add to it because we've already added to the foundation? In this area right over here and in this area right over here, there is extra concrete underneath the floor, huge pillars. I'm right, aren't I, Brother Kaufman? I don't see him in here. But there are huge pillars underneath there so that these balconies can be extended across here and we can seat a couple of hundred more people up there if we need to. Now, if the foundation is solid, then you can build on your life potential and you can continue to build on your life potential. You can add another floor and maybe add another floor. There are general callings for all believers that are the basis for discovering your specific calling. Galatians chapter 6 verse 10 teaches that we're to do good to all men, but especially to the household of faith. One of the general callings that God has for everybody's life is to do good to everybody. Do all the good works you can. Do good you can, all the good you can to everybody, but especially do it for believers. 1 Timothy chapter 2 teaches that we are to pray for all that are in authority over us. Now, that's a general calling. Everybody here, ought to pray for everybody in authority over them. And one reason is because God may communicate direction for your life through those in authority over you. James chapter 1 verse 27 commands us, this is a general calling, this is something everybody ought to do, to care for the fatherless and the widows. That's something everybody ought to watch for opportunities to do. You want God to bless you? Watch for somebody who's fatherless, watch for widows, do something for them. Matthew chapter 28, 19 and 20 is another general calling. Everybody has this calling. Nobody's got a specialty here. Everybody has it. It gives us the commission to spread the gospel to every creature, to get them saved, to baptize them, and to teach them to win others. If you're here and lost this morning, we're praying for you to get saved. Now, don't worry about a specific life calling if you don't know it yet. Just get busy with the general callings till God shows you more. Then how can you identify the specific life calling that God may have for you? It may be because of the concerns of your parents. You remember how David was not able to build the temple, but Solomon was concerned about it, and David then built the temple. It may be that what your parents are not able to do, you might be able to do. One of the joys of my life is that I have come to realize that I am not fulfilling, that I'm fulfilling not just my calling in life, but in some ways my life right now is fulfilling my dad's calling in life as well. Another way that you might identify the specific call of God upon your life is by the critical needs of believers around you. Nehemiah heard what was happening, how they were in distress because the walls were torn down, and that became the direction for his life. You might identify your calling by some responsibility that is assigned to you. Hear me, I'll say more about this later. Do not run from any responsibility that is assigned to you by an authority figure. God, certainly you have to decide what God wants you to do, but if an authority over your life assigns a responsibility to you, and that is God's will for your life, and you walk away from it, you may lose direction for a long time because of it. 1 Timothy 1:18, Paul said, "This charge I commit unto thee, son Timothy." Your parents may give you direction. Others in authority may give you direction. Another way that you can identify specific calling of God for your life is by two or three rhemas or words from God, something that you're reading along in the Bible and God just calls this to your attention. 2 Corinthians 13:1 says, "In the mouth of two or three witnesses shall every word be established." Another way that you may understand God's specific calling for your life is by God's evident blessing on what you're doing. Joseph was in the right spot at the right time. Evidently, God wanted him to do what he did. Another way that you may come to know God's specific calling for your life is by a special burden from God. Moses, at age 40, sensed that God wanted him to do something. He didn't really do it till 80, but he sensed that special burden from God. Another way that you can sense a specific life calling is by taking the initiative and opportunities that God gives you. Boy, there are opportunities that come our way. If we're not careful, we'll miss them. 1 Corinthians 16:15 says, "You know the house of Stephanas, and that they have addicted themselves to the ministry of the saints." See, in verse 17 it says, "I am glad of the coming of Stephanas and Fortunatus and Achaicus, for that which was lacking on your part they have supplied." Another way you may know the specific calling for your life is by direct call from God. Galatians 1:15 to 17 says, "But when Paul's talking, when it pleased God who separated me from my mother's womb and called me by His grace to reveal His Son in me that I might preach Him among the heathens." Jeremiah, Paul, and David all had specific calls. Some pastors have as well. Others have as well. But some have identified God's call in one of these other ways. So what is your life call? Your life calling, follow me carefully, I'll show it to you real clearly. Your life calling is a specific assignment from God for you to minister to a particular group of people. That calling doesn't change. It may be enlarged. It may be diminished. Watch me. Jesus came as the Messiah to the Jews. They rejected Him. Did He walk away and quit? No. He opened His arms out wide and took in the whole world. In every illustration I'm about to give to you, the person involved has seen their ministry enlarged already to reach and minister to many more people than just their life calling. Peter was the apostle to the Jews. To whom has Peter now ministered? People all over the world for the last 20 centuries. Paul was the apostle to the Gentiles. He also had a burden for the Jews. Nehemiah was called to preserve the remnant of Jerusalem. Joseph was called to preserve his family. He wound up preserving not just his family, but several nations, including Egypt, Israel, and other surrounding nations. Esther could have clearly diminished her calling to save her people. Instead, she enlarged it. Timothy was called to serve Paul. Then, watch this. His calling at first was to serve Paul. When he served Paul faithfully, then he was called to pastor the church at Ephesus. His ministry enlarged. But then his ministry began to be felt by other churches all over the first century world because of the letters that Paul wrote. And now his ministry is felt by virtually every church for the last 2,000 years. The house of Stephanas was called to serve the saints. Notice that a calling in life is as much or more to who as it is to do what. I was called to preach years ago. I didn't realize it at the time, but I also, a few years later, was going to have a call to serve the people of Lincoln, Illinois. that call expanded to central Illinois. And especially I have noticed that God's call upon my life is to serve young people and their parents. Hudson Taylor was called to the Chinese people. John Wesley was called to the common people of England. He also reached America, and now his testimony for Christ has reached around the world. George Mueller was called to serve the orphans of England. He started out small, enlarged it. Now his ministry goes everywhere, and he's been dead for many decades. David Brainerd was called to the Indians of frontier America. Notice that the calling is not just what you do, it's to whom you do it. D.L. Moody was called to serve the children of Chicago. Fanny Crosby was called to help believers sing praises to God. Her ministry is still enlarging. The fellow you're going to hear preach tonight, Titus Kamala from Kenya, Africa, has been called to help and serve Kenyan orphans. A missionary who has been to our church, and we have been to Chicago to help him, Brother Edward Fort, is called to the foreigners of Chicago. He goes out street witnessing, carries tracts with him in how many different languages? 30 different languages, something like that. He's passing out tracts. He's called to the foreigners of Chicago. John and Marge Borscher sitting over here, it's obvious that part of their key calling in life is to serve couples and help build marriages. Ron Garrison, evangelist who preached here several months ago, is scheduled to be here again in a year. His calling is to prisoners. Rock of Ages prison ministry. I talked to Dave Hetty on the telephone yesterday afternoon. They are called to the Romanians. Brother Bill Cash is called to the fairgoers. You may be called to serve husbands or wives or mothers or children, or babies, or the handicapped. While we were traveling a couple of weeks ago, we went to church on a Wednesday night at a church in London, Ontario, Canada, and I was talking to the pastor of that church. He said to me, the reason this church is meeting in this spot, he said, is because it's the perfect spot for me to minister. They're in a downtown area. They're meeting in a building that's 100 years old that was pastored 60 years ago by one of the greatest preachers of this century. After he died, the church went liberal. He came around with a burden later in this downtown area of London, Ontario, Canada, and bought the church building, and the few people who were there went somewhere else, and they've started a conservative, fundamental, Bible-believing church in that old building. He said, now this is the perfect spot for me. He said, I'll never try to move from here. He said, just a block away are the people that I'm called to. I listened. He said, I spend hours every week in the bars, in the taverns, in the low-life places. He said, I used to be a policeman. He said, I know how to handle myself wherever I am. He said, my calling is to drunkards, prostitutes, criminals, drug addicts, and drug pushers. He said, if you'd have looked around you in church tonight, half of our people have been saved right off the streets. Your calling in life may be to the poor. It may be to public leaders. It may be to businessmen. It may be to the fatherless. It may be to juvenile delinquents. It may be to pastors. It may be to fathers. It may be to the divorced. It may be to the sick. It may be to unwed mothers. I talked to a man recently who said to me, he said, my wife and I feel very strongly that our calling is to minister to widows. I heard a pastor, a preacher recently, and he was telling about how his calling is to the street people in a major city in Minnesota. He pastors a big older church in a major metropolitan area. And he is such a tremendous preacher. He's one of the most exceptional, gifted, eloquent preachers of our day. And he has been offered, some churches have come in and said, come be our pastor. Huge churches, tremendous ministries. He turns them down flat. Not only that, but some people came in and tried to buy his church building off of him because it was located in an area where they wanted to buy some land in downtown, in that downtown area, that metropolitan area. They said, we will buy you land and build you anything you want out on the outskirts. He said, no, not interested. Why? Why wouldn't he go take another church that was much larger, where it looks like he could have much greater impact? Why wouldn't he move outside? Because he said, my calling is to the people of this downtown area. This is the best place for me to be. I don't want to go anywhere else. He knows what his calling is. He's following it. Incidentally, your life calling is more important than your life work. Your life work may be any legitimate job that God will allow you to fulfill your life calling. It doesn't have to be a job of great prestige, because your recognition will not be by your life work, but by your life calling. The Apostle Paul, he was the apostle to the Gentiles, right? How did he support himself? He was a tent maker. Nehemiah, what was his calling to the remnant? What was his occupation? He was the cupbearer for the king. Was Peter's calling to the Jews and the early church? What was his occupation? Fisherman. What was Luke's calling? He was called to serve Paul. What was his occupation? He was physician. Now, it's not to say that full-time Christian service isn't important. It's not to say that there shouldn't be people in full-time Christian service because they have more time, that it may be that because of the extra time that they have, then they can accomplish more. What it is to say is this, that your life calling, you need to make your calling and election sure. Life callings of mates should complement each other. You can see that clearly illustrated in the assistant pastors here and even in my wife and I. You can see how Brother Bryant and Miss Bryant, their calling is to minister to students and parents and help them train them their lives in education. That's their life calling. You can see it with the balls, with the youth work and the music and other things. You can see it with my wife and I and the ministry that we have. How can you enlarge your life potential by enlarging your life calling, accepting the calling you have, and then build on it and enlarge on it? Second way you can increase your life potential is by asking God to let you enlarge your coast. That's what Jabez did in 1 Chronicles 4:10. How are you going to enlarge it if you don't ask God? You have not because you ask not. The Bible says, ask and you shall receive, seek and you shall find, knock and it shall be opened. Look, listen to me. There are businessmen here who have people who work for them. You walk down, you talk to one of your employees, you give him a job. And while you're giving him the job, he looks at you and says, you know, Mr. Bossman, I appreciate this job you've given me, and you know, I remember something else that needs doing in that same area. Is it all right with you if I do that while I'm there? What's the boss man probably going to say? Sure. You know what's going to happen if you say to the Lord, Lord, you've given me this to do, would it be all right if I do this as well? He's probably going to let you do it. The third way you can increase your life potential is by faithfully accepting. Oh, this is so big. Oh, I wish somebody would hear this. There are people sitting here right now, your life potential is diminished. It is stilted. It is stopped. And you don't know why. And this one is the reason. Oh, I wish I could get folks here this morning to see this. The way to increase your life potential is by faithfully accepting whatever responsibilities God gives you so He can give you more. A major thing that keeps many men, young men in particular, from being used of God is that they don't take little responsibilities seriously enough. You give them a little job, they don't want that. They want the big one. They pass up the little, waiting for the big. We had a preacher come through here, Brother Larry Brown from North Augusta, South Carolina, one of the premier preachers of our generation, our time right now, a preaching machine. Did you hear what Brother Brown said was his first job in the church? To watch the steeple. You remember that? He was assigned to watch the steeple. He's a brand new Christian. They said, what can he do? They didn't know what he can do. He said, won't you watch the steeple? Every week he'd go by looking at the steeple. He kept coming back to the pastor saying, the steeple's fine. I checked it out this week. Next thing he did was, it was menial things. It was little things. Listen, any of us at any time who get too big to do menial things, we're too big. God can't use us at all. Every one of us at some time, no matter how old you get, no matter how long you've been serving God, are given menial tasks. You can call them menial. There are no such thing as menial tasks. people pass up the little waiting for the big. They don't realize that the little responsibility is the seed from which God grows the big responsibility. Let me tell you who's going to wind up. The leaders in the next generation among our young people, it's the young people who watch for the little things, who don't mind sweeping a floor, who don't mind picking up trash, who will watch for the widows and help them, who will watch for others that they can assist in what those are the ones who will be the leaders in the future because they are planting the seeds that God can give fruit in their life. The parable of the talents in Matthew 25 is not only a prophecy of the future where God gave this one five talents and He made it five more and so on. That is also a key principle of life. And that principle is this: you take the responsibility God gives you, God will give you more. That's the way you increase your life potential. Number four, you want to know how to enlarge your life potential by pursuing wisdom. Proverbs 3:18, wisdom is a tree of life to them that take hold upon her. Honestly. From age 15 or 16, I have pursued wisdom. But if I could... Is everybody listening? If I could live my life over again, wisdom would be far more of a pursuit than it has already been in my life. Watch me. Watch my hands. My arms are outspread. My hands are far apart. This is a... Let's say that in between this area here is all the knowledge and wisdom in the world. How much do you and I know? I doubt if it's that much. Just that little tiny bit right there, I doubt if it is that much. You know what it also means? Watch me. Out of all of this, you've got to have enough wisdom to choose which knowledge and wisdom to get. Get all the knowledge you need to function, to work, to live life, to excel, and then pursue wisdom. Pursue understanding how God looks at life. Pursue understanding the principles of life, the principles and truths of God's Word. Apply them to your life, then pursue it to find the answers others need for the problems of their life. Jesus, did you hear Brother Cash the other night when he was giving the testimony? And I asked him toward the end of that testimony, Brother Cash, how did you learn these things? I came home, fell on my face and said, God, help me to understand. You know what he was doing? He was saying, God, I want wisdom. He was pursuing wisdom in the key area that would match his calling for life. Jesus' key pursuit as a young man was for wisdom. By age 30, Jesus had enough wisdom that people said, never did any man speak like this man. The wisdom. A fifth way that you can increase your life potential, this is so important, is everybody still listening? Is by responding properly. Oh, I wish I had an hour to preach here and I don't. By responding properly to the trials of life. Anybody ever had any? Psalm chapter 4, verse 1, listen to this verse. O God of my righteousness, Thou hast enlarged me when I was in distress. When does enlargement come in your life? When you think it's not going to come. I want to tell you something this morning. Please listen to me right now. Don't ever run from your trials. Run to your trials. Now understand what I'm talking about here. I'm not talking about the little bumps in the road that everybody has. I'm talking about trials, T-R-I-A-L-S, in all caps. I'm talking about those things that you feel may destroy you. Those things that you feel may destroy your ministry, your life, your future. I'm talking about those things that when you get in the middle of them, they consume your mind, your attention, your time, your thoughts, your emotions. I'm talking about those things that when you begin to think about them, your gut hurts, your body trembles, and good food tastes like paper. I said, don't run from those, run to those. Be like the buffalo. Did you know buffaloes do not turn and run from a storm? They run into the storm. They are built so that they tuck their head down and the wind doesn't lift them off the ground. It pushes them closer to the ground where there is safety. Run to your trials. Your trials are the opportunities of life. They are sent, or at least allowed to be sent, to your life by God They are meant to be understood. James 1:5, if any man lack wisdom, it's in the context of your trials. Let him ask of God. Those trials are the ones that you say, this doesn't make any sense. They are meant to be understood. There's another verse that comes into focus in this regard. It's Ephesians chapter 5, verse 16, that says, redeeming the time because the days are evil. There's a Greek word there that you really ought to know. It is the word kairos. Say it with me, please. Kairos. K-A-I-R-O-S. It is the word time. Redeeming the time because the days are evil. There are two Greek words for time. There's the word chronos. That is just time is passing. That's like it's 11:42 right now. And time is passing. That's chronos. That is not the word that is used there. It is the word kairos. It is the word for an epochal event in your life. It is the word for a season of life. It is the word for an opportunity of life. Redeem the time does not talk about you. It's not talking about just using your time in general wisely. It's talking about this. When a trial comes in your life, you will feel like this is the most horrible thing that has happened. The truth is, it is the most wonderful thing that has happened because God has allowed this as a season of opportunity that will increase and enlarge your life potential. You have to recognize it and get it and use it because evil will work against you using your trials. Satan will try to get you to waste your trials. Redeeming the time, the kairos, because the days are evil. The word is not the word evil for evil in the abstract. It is the Greek word poneros. It means evil actively working against good. Right in the middle of your trials, Satan knows that your trial can accomplish much to enlarge your life potential. He tries to get you to run from your trial. You think the evil is so powerful, I'm going to be destroyed. It all depends on your response. In Numbers chapter 11, Moses faced such a trial and he said, God, I wish you'd just let me not be the leader anymore. Don't ever pray such a thing. If you respond wrongly like Moses, you can actually diminish your life potential like I believe Moses did. If you respond humanly and normally, how do most people respond to a trial? They don't act, they react. They get upset with somebody, they give them a piece of their mind. That's the way the Corinthians responded to Paul. If you respond that way, you don't learn what you need to learn. You waste your trial, your life potential stalls, hear me, and God has to send the trial again because He wanted to teach you something you needed to learn. The human response typically is to wash your hands of the situation and walk away. That's the reason pastors resign in the middle of trials. That's the reason bus workers resign, Sunday school teachers resign, nursery workers resign, ushers resign. That's the reason most people resign in the middle of something because it's the human response to a trial to walk away. If you do, you have to go through the trial all over again. If you do what Jesus did and what Paul did, what did Jesus do with Peter? He kept going back to him. What did Paul do with the church at Corinth who criticized him unjustly? What did Paul do? 2 Corinthians chapter 6. He said, our mouth is open, our heart is enlarged, we are going enlarged. Did you hear it? That's the way God enlarges your heart, is when people are cruel and harsh towards you, you make your heart bigger to take those people in. If you do that, the kairos is redeemed and what you thought, hear me, what you think is the death of your life potential actually phenomenally increases your life potential. Let me give you an illustration of a kairos from history. July the 1st, 1863. Anybody know what that date was? July 1st, 1863. Who knows? Gettysburg. General Robert E. Lee, with the Confederate forces, had moved for the first time into northern territory in order to meet the Union forces on their own ground and hopefully break the back of the Union army. Unexpectedly, Robert E. Lee's men met General Meade's Union forces at the town of Gettysburg on the first day of July 1863. Robert E. Lee was the victor. He took the town. No one to this day knows why he did not follow through, press for full victory, and defeat General Meade that day. What he didn't know was that forces were coming in from the Union Army that night. And by the next day, the Union Army would be strong enough to defeat him. It took two more days. And what was the casualty count? Here it is, got it right here. 4,000 Southerners, 3,000 Northerners killed in the battle. The total number of casualties, those killed, wounded, missing, or captured, 23,000 for the North, and from 25,000 to 28,000 for the South, and more than that, the course of history was turned. Gettysburg didn't break the back of the Union, it broke the back of the Confederacy and changed the course of history. Now, whatever you think about whichever side was winning is totally immaterial at this point. The point is this. Robert E. Lee had his Kairos. He had his opportunity. He didn't take it that day. He lost it forever. And there are people in this room right now who don't know it, but you're going to run into a Kairos, an opportunity, and if you don't seize it, it might be an hour, it might be a day, it might be a week, it might be a month. The Kairos will pass, and it may never come your way again. Your life effectiveness is not judged by the amount of time that you have to live as much as it is by your seeing and redeeming those special times of opportunity that God sends into your life. How can you increase your life potentials? Everybody still with me? Say amen. Don't you quit before I do. You've got to hear the rest of this. I'm running as fast as I can. By enlarging your life calling, by asking God to let you enlarge your coast, by accepting responsibility, by pursuing wisdom, by responding properly to the trials of life. Here's a good one. By having children and training them to honor God. By having children and training them to honor God. Listen to Isaiah chapter 54, verse 2. I had it marked, took my marker out. Isaiah 54, verse 2, here's what it says. Enlarge the place of thy tent. Let them stretch forth the curtains of thine habitation. Spare not, lengthen thy cords, and strengthen thy stakes. The application could be to a family, especially in light of Psalm 127 that says, children are inheritance of the Lord, the fruit of the womb is His reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. He's talking about the strength. Happy is the man that has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. What happens when a man has a number of children and trains them to honor God? He increases his life potential. And let me point this out to you right here. This is very important. The time that a father spends with his children cannot diminish his life purpose, life work, and life calling. There are times you get so rushed, you think, I don't have time to spend my children. It will only enhance that. In fact, if you don't take the time that you need for your children, you will diminish your life work and your life calling. You know, you can tell just by being around them sometimes. The children whose fathers are attentive to them, spend time with them, teach them, and can be interrupted for brief periods of time by those children. It's like there is a calming sense of control in the lives of those children produced by the father's continuing influence. You know, one of the saddest things happening in our day is when grandparents undermine parents trying to raise children for God. I've seen that this very week like I've hardly ever seen it in my life. Few things in this world are as powerful as two or three generations working together to serve God. A seventh way you can enlarge your life potential is by choosing the right church that will confirm your beliefs and standards and challenge you in your walk with God. Do you know God not only created the home, God created the church. Jesus said, upon this rock I will build my church and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Bible doesn't say that I know of about your home. The gates of hell might prevail against your home unless your home is tied into the right church. All churches are not the same. What you believe does make a difference. Your service for God is not alone. You are not isolated. You do not conquer alone. At Jerusalem, that church in Acts 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, they were all with one accord in one place. Look, can you imagine if you're a soldier and a battle's taking place and you think you're going to go over there and fight an army by yourself? You need the right church in order to give you the foundation on which your life potential can be increased. And the eighth reason, or the eighth way to increase your life potential, I love this, is by refusing to retire until you die. By refusing to retire until you die. Now, I'm not talking about you stop one job, do something else. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about where you sit down and say, I've worked all these years and I'm not going to do anything else. Surest way I know of to get God to just take you on to heaven because you're not doing any good for Him on earth. I had a pastor this week told me about an older lady in his church who about 7 years ago, he said she just backed off from all ministry. Here's what she said. She said, it's time for me to quit. I've put my time in the church. Now let the younger ones do it. He said she did. She sat down. He said for the last 5 years she has had two major spells with depression that have lasted 5 years. And he said, I keep watching her. She refuses to wake up. But the further she goes in that direction, the worse her health gets. Are you listening? God's retirement plan is heaven. Jonathan, go forth, missionary to China, age 65, prayed for 20 more years. He only got half that many. But they said he accomplished more in that decade than many missionaries could do in a lifetime. He went to heaven in 1936 at the age of 76. He was still in Manchuria, China through 1934. But listen to the baptisms. For 1932, 1933, and 1934, 1932, 472 baptisms, 1933, 778 baptisms, 1934, 966 baptisms, and when he came back to the United States because his health wouldn't last, he continued to speak all over the United States and Canada till God called him home. Those are the ways you increase your life potential. I wish I had time to preach how to cut down your life potential. Let me tell you how quickly you take up offenses. You don't respond properly to trials. You become bitter and resentful. And according to Ezekiel chapter 5, verse 11, if you allow abominable things in your life, you will decrease your life potential. Listen to the verse. Because thou hast defiled my sanctuary with all thy detestable things and with all thine abominations, therefore will I also diminish thee. You allow abominable things in your life, you will diminish your life. Hey, remember Golda Meir's statement. Moses was not a great leader. Traveled all over the Middle East and settled on the only piece of real estate without any oil. But what if Israel had gotten half of Jordan, the northern part of Saudi Arabia, a third of Iraq, all of Lebanon, and half of Syria? Huh. How about then? I'm going to shock you. I spent hours researching it. She would have had very little more oil than she has right now. Because even if Israel took all of that area, there's almost no oil in those areas. Almost no oil in northern Saudi Arabia or western Iraq or southern Syria. But, this is exciting to me. If Israel had taken all that God wanted her to have and then said to God, God, would you enlarge my coast? A little bit further down into Saudi Arabia are her rich oil fields. Southeast of here is Kuwait, which in one little territory is the richest oil fields in the world. east of the Euphrates over here in Iraq are Iraq's oil fields, and northern Syria is where Syria's oil fields are. I can't stand it. I don't know whether that would have been God's will for Israel, but I know the illustration is perfect. The richest blessings in life are reserved for those who take all God has for them and then ask for more. If Israel had taken all God had for her and then asked for a little more all the way around, she would have financially controlled the world as far as oil is concerned. And then held on to it. Honored God all these years and held on to it until the oil came around. But Israel took one piece of the pie. And there are folks sitting here this morning, sitting out in a boat, hadn't even got the piece yet. And there are folks sitting here with a piece of the pie who need to say, God, I want the rest of what You got for me. And there are folks sitting here who ought to be on their face in this altar this morning saying, oh God, I want You to enlarge my coast. There's some oil waiting out yonder for You to strike it rich. Will You do it? Would You bow with me, please?